Cities across Ohio have prepared for increased immigration enforcement, with some passing ordinances to limit local law enforcement cooperation with ICE. Now, state lawmakers on both sides of the aisle are proposing bills related to the issue, including House Bill 26, a Republican-backed measure pushing for greater cooperation. This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me in this recorded interview to discuss House Bill 26 and what it will mean for local governments if it becomes law is Ohio State Representative Josh Williams, a Republican from Sylvania Township. Thanks so much for being here, Representative Williams.
Thank you for having me on today.
So what would your bill, House Bill 26, require of local governments when it comes to cooperating with federal agents and immigration enforcement?
So it would require local governments to cooperate with federal immigration enforcement. More importantly, it would prohibit jurisdictions, political subdivisions, such as cities and counties, from prohibiting their employees, their law enforcement agents, from cooperating with ICE. So what we're seeing is a large number of cities in Toledo are now trying to put restrictions on their law enforcement officers on being able to cooperate with ICE, but also just doing any immigration enforcement whatsoever. So our bill does several things. It requires every law enforcement agency in Ohio to take certain actions and cooperate with federal officials in the enforcement of federal immigration enforcement. It also requires our jails to honor federal immigration detention holders, essentially holding criminal illegal aliens in jail until ICE is able to come and pick them up and give them their due process and get a final deportation order and deport them.
Well, Cincinnati has an ordinance that prohibits city property from being used as a staging area for ICE and bans the city from sharing surveillance data. How would that kind of stuff be viewed under this legislation if it were to become state law?
Those two specific provisions are not in House Bill 26. You know, House Bill 26 was introduced in February of 2025. Long before we had this increased federal enforcement effort, we saw it coming because, you know, President Trump was reelected on a campaign to increase immigration enforcement and undergo the largest number of deportations we've seen in generations. So in anticipation of that and the non-cooperation that I've seen in my home county of Lucas County, that was the interest of House Bill 26 to just make sure our local law enforcement departments cooperate with federal immigration efforts and specifically our jails, allow ICE to come in and take an individual that has a federal immigration detention holder and honor those holders instead of releasing them back onto the streets.
Okay, so it doesn't deal with things like city property as staging areas or sharing surveillance data or anything like that?
No, it doesn't mention those topics at all.
Okay. Well, under this bill, what would happen to local governments that don't cooperate in the ways that the legislation outlines?
Yeah, so if a political subdivision chose not to cooperate and would be in violation of state law under this bill, it would result in them losing 10% of their local government fund, which is millions of dollars that go back to our local governments through our LGF. That 10% that reduction will be reallocated to our highway patrol, our state highway patrol, to do interdiction on our state highways in between the sanctuary cities to be able to capture any illegal alien that is traveling between those sanctuary cities.
Do you have any concerns about home rule with this legislation, the ability for these local municipalities to govern themselves?
I have no concern whatsoever. The Ohio Supreme Court has said time and time again that the General Assembly has the power of the purse. We saw that when it came to red light ticket and speed camera enforcement, when there was a statute passed that would restrict the local government funds based off of how much revenue was generated by those type of photo enforcement programs. The Supreme Court said that Ohio has the jurisdiction to be able to restrict the local government funds for purposes like that. We can prioritize what we want to spend money on. So this wouldn't violate home rule at all.
I know you said that your legislation doesn't deal with anything like, you know, city property for staging areas and surveillance data. Is that something that you foresee could be added to this legislation during the legislative process?
Once it's in a committee, once it's introduced to a committee, the committee has the ability to amend that bill at their free will. I have not heard any cause for that being amended into this legislation. But if there was any proposals, I'm sure I would find out about it as a chief proponent of the legislation.
Where does House Bill 26 stand in the whole legislative process?
So it's still in committee. It's in the Public Safety Committee. We are whipping votes consistently to see if we have the votes. I believe we have the Republican votes to get it out of committee and onto the House floor. Many people in the caucus want this legislation to move forward because there has to be some bite behind our bark. We want Ohio to cooperate with federal immigration enforcement. We do not want any criminal illegal aliens in our communities. And we want law and order. And we saw what happened in Minnesota when a state and a city refuses to cooperate for federal immigration enforcement. What happens is where you get a surge of law enforcement that has to go street by street, neighborhood by neighborhood, house by house, and going to get criminal illegal aliens out of the community. Instead, what we should be doing is allowing ICE to come into our jails, come into our courts, where we have people who have committed criminal offenses that are here illegally, and allow our federal immigration officers to take them into custody and send them through the federal immigration process. That is how we avoid the surges that we saw in Minnesota, and we provide safety and security to our communities.
So you think the surges that happened in Minnesota, that was a direct result of a lack of cooperation with by the local governments?
Absolutely. It was cited by the federal immigration enforcement officers that was the reason that they had to do that interdiction was because that state was refusing to comply with federal detention holders, administrative warrants, the normal administrative process that's been used for immigration enforcement for decades under both Democrat and Republican presidents, all of a sudden now has turned taboo in the modern Democrat Party, where they don't want to allow these individuals to be deported. And that's sad that we've gotten to the point where cities and counties believe that they can just allow individuals to ignore federal law. It sends a bad signal to our residents that if they don't agree with the law, they don't have to comply. This is a dark time in America's history where states are starting to openly say that citizens should be disobeying federal law moving forward.
Representative Williams, what have you heard from legislative leaders about how much do they see this bill as a priority? How quickly do you think they want to move it during the session?
As a member of leadership in the Ohio House, we have had several discussions about this in leadership. I can't disclose those conversations, but as a member of leadership, it is a priority for me, and it is a priority for many of the members of leadership in the Ohio House. I can't speak for the Senate.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for your time today, sir. I've been talking with Ohio State Representative Josh Williams, a Republican from Sylvania Township. Really appreciate your time today.
Thank you. Have a good one.
You too. Up next, two Cincinnati council members on the city's actions related to cooperation with ICE. This is Cincinnati Edition. You're listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We just spoke with State Representative Josh Williams about cooperation with ICE. Now we turn to Cincinnati City Council, which has passed several motions related to immigration enforcement. Joining me now to discuss the action the city has taken and the legislation lawmakers are considering in Columbus are Cincinnati City Council members Anna Albee and Ryan James. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having us today.
Thanks for having us.
Councilmember Albee, let me start with you. First, I want to say in the discussion with Representative Williams, I said the city passed ordinances. I said that incorrectly. I want to ask you both about your thoughts about what we just heard from State Representative Williams. But first, explain briefly the two motions that you introduced that council passed in February.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you so much for this opportunity. And I appreciate it. And yes, so to clarify, so the city council passed a motion which essentially requests that the city administration does something. So that's kind of what a motion is. So the first one was requesting the city administration to prohibit sharing real-time access to city-owned surveillance technology with third parties for the purposes of civil immigration enforcement unless mandated by law and a court order or judicial warrant. So I want to break down a few words there because it'll be important for the rest of our conversation. So something that Rep. Williams failed to mention is it is already a crime to obstruct federal immigration enforcement. So we are not obstructing, but what we are saying is that We want city resources to be used for city purposes, and multiple federal courts have ruled that local municipalities cannot be compelled to implement civil federal immigration. That is the role of the federal government, to do that civil federal immigration enforcement. So what we are doing here is clarifying, you know, how city resources are going to be used. And we continue to collaborate with many federal agencies to get violent offenders off our streets. So the first one is around the real-time surveillance. But the second motion is in the similar vein around limiting city-owned or city-controlled property from being used for federal immigration enforcement operations, again, unless there's a valid court order or judicial warrant. So you can imagine, you know, rec centers are for people doing rec center activities. They're not meant to be staging locations for immigration enforcement. And in that motion, we also have directions to make sure that all our frontline staff are trained on what to do if immigration enforcement or any other type of federal agent comes into the rec center and asks about something, you know, how our staff should respond in that time. So those were the first two motions. And then I'm sure Councilmember James will cover his motion as well.
Yes. So, Councilmember James, you introduced a motion related to citizenship status that council passed. Explain what your motion did and why you pushed for it.
Absolutely. We had two efforts. So the first was a motion that did two really important things. The first component was giving the city 90 days to evaluate our workflows and identify where we are asking our residents about their citizenship status. From my perspective, from my purview, that is not valuable information to any of the processes at the city of Cincinnati. You know, it's no secret that we're in an ever-evolving federal landscape where even holding that information does present a risk to some of our residents. So first off, the first component was a look in the mirror. The second component was challenging the city administration to divest from these workflows when prescribed as unnecessary. So there are a few areas in which we, in order to receive and administer federal funding, we may need to inquire about citizenship status, but making sure that any place that it is waste, it is not inquired about.
Okay. Well, we are talking about motions Cincinnati City Council has passed related to federal immigration enforcement. Do you have questions or comments? Give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Councilmember Albee, Representative Williams said the bill he introduced did not pertain to staging on city property or data sharing. Were your motions crafted with that legislation in mind? I mean, did you have any concerns about losing state funding if any city policies run afoul of his bill?
To be clear, we were very well aware of what the state was working on, and I worked closely with the city administration to make sure that we were being very specific with the scope of what we were identifying in these motions. And again, ultimately, what we're trying to do is protect city resources, that's people, facilities, for city purposes, and that's within our jurisdiction. And again, we are continuing to support and partner with the FBI, ATF, DEA, the governor's office and state patrol to get violent offenders off of our street, no matter what that means. But what we don't want to be doing is stepping outside of our role to help to have the federal government's job, which is the civil immigration enforcement. That's the federal government's job. And we don't want our technology or our resources being commandeered for that purpose, because we need it for our own purposes, right? That's why we have things like, you know, drones and cameras, is so that we can be doing our law enforcement activities on a day-to-day basis.
Councilmember James, what about your motion? Were you trying to kind of avoid areas that Representative Williams' legislation addresses? Do you have any concerns about the potential for losing state funding if his bill is to become law?
You asked two questions here. The first answer is yes, or the first answer is no, and the second answer is yes. So first and foremost, you know, my purview is protecting the the safety and privacy of the residents of Cincinnati. So that's where we're focused. I don't want to frame us as being in any type of reactive state to the state house, because honestly, there's a cascade of really devastating choices from my perspective, coming from both the federal government and the state. So I think I'd I know I have a shaved head, but I would certainly lose my hair if I decided to spend too much time there. Our conversations are from working with immigration organizations, social service organizations, community leaders on the ground, understanding where some of these barriers are that are being presented to our residents, and making sure that we are proactive and making sure that we are protecting the privacy and safety of our residents. The second part of your question about, does this make me experience fear that potentially our federal funding is under attack?
Or state funding.
Or state funding as well. I mean, all of the above. But I will say that particularly the state funding is, yes, I think that those dollars are vital to the city of Cincinnati in our ability to welcome and drive growth and protect our residents. But I will say that it seems like a lot of these pillars are under attack regardless. So I think that the right state of mind for our representatives and our city leadership right now is focus on our residents, put our head down, and carve a path forward that is not solely reliant on those resources. But I do say that, I will say that is very important, that we stay in a strategic landscape where we're protecting those resources as well.
Okay. We did get an email from Steve in Oakley. Steve writes, did the three motions passed by City Council have the force of law? Are they a formal adoption of city policy or simply recommendations to the city manager on management for relationships with ICE and other federal authorities? Councilmember Albee, I think you kind of addressed that earlier, but just want to make sure that's very clear.
Yes, thank you. So they are motions which are not ordinances. Ordinances are our versions of laws. So it is direction to the city administration on how we want to conduct ourselves and have those relationships. And I should also add, we also did a resolution after Renee Good was shot and killed in Minneapolis. This was before Alex Preddy's shooting, but would have included him as well. But in that resolution, which is not binding anyway, but we did also ask and urge any federal law enforcement operating in Cincinnati to comply with city policy regarding wearing masks or not wearing masks, having their body-worn camera on, and having clear identification for officers. And that really is us asking anyone operating in the city of Cincinnati to uphold our standards, right? CPD does this every single day when it comes with interacting with our residents with a level of professionalism and making sure everyone is safe.
We got an email from Corey who writes, what are the positions of the council members on the argument that anyone in the country illegally is a criminal for illegal entry, and it is thus not a civil matter? Councilmember James, have you given thought to that argument?
Yeah, I think that I think this is a flat way of looking at a very complicated issue. I think there are duplicitous reasons why someone would venture to the United States, and as we know that the landscape around naturalization is one that is devastating. I think that the not to speak out of my purview here, but I think that the federal government deploying billions and billions of dollars to deport folks instead of creating constructive pathways to citizenship is a abhorrent misuse of resources, to say the least. But I would say that we, in my purview, the city of Cincinnati, we are in a position where we are, although challenged you in this particular circumstances, understanding of the federal law and compliant with the federal law.
Mm-hmm. What do you think about that argument, Councilmember Albee, that anyone in the country illegal is a criminal for illegal entry?
Well, I take offense to it, to be honest. I think, you know, even the language that Rep. Williams was using around illegal aliens, I think is really offensive. You know, I to be personal for a moment, my grandfather came over on a boat from Italy when he was 16, went on to become a dentist. And then my dad started his own business here in Cincinnati. And then my two brothers went on to join the military and are lawyers for the federal government. And I'm in city council. And that to me is the American dream, right? And we as a a country have sold that dream to everyone around the world as a beacon of freedom. And to have that type of language be reflected in the current presidential administration policy, I find to be really upsetting. And so I do agree it's a dark time for America when we've essentially said, you know, we don't want people pursuing the American dream when that's been the promise of our country since the beginning. So I take offense in that language. I will emphasize what Councilmember James said, is that it would be really great if the federal government and Congress could spend more time and resources on speeding up the pathways to legal citizenship and visas and all of that. The wait lists for these type of programs is insane. Months and months and months. So, you know, the majority of people who have overstayed their visas or their status is because it takes so darn long to get through the process. So I would love to see the federal government spend time and resources in speeding up the bureaucracy and less and fewer resources penalizing and criminalizing and attacking our residents who are here safely to pursue the American dream.
Councilmember James, you mentioned that your motion tasked the city administration to figure out if any city departments were collecting citizenship status as part of their standard protocol. What did you find out? Did you find out whether any city departments or programs are collecting that information when they don't really need to be?
Yes, we've anecdotally heard of a few, but the formal presentation from the city manager's office, the 90-day period in which we challenged them, with this time frame we gave them to come back with an answer, has not lapsed yet. So we're still waiting on that formal presentation. I don't want to speak anecdotally, but there's at least a few places that we know that is possible to divest from that would create no burden to the city of Cincinnati, so which is fantastic to hear.
Okay. Councilmember Albee, City Council approved these motions in late February. Do you have a sense for what, if any, impact they've had on the city and its immigrant communities?
Yeah, I think, you know, one of our greatest role in City Hall is making sure that we continue to be a welcoming city and that people feel safe. So I do want to highlight, in addition to these motions, we've also put dollars behind this work. In the last budget cycle, and I assume we'll do it again this year, you know, we've directed funding towards groups that are specifically helping our immigrant population, organizations like Immigrant and Refugee Law Center, Catholic Charity, Santa Maria, Hispanic Chamber, Cincinnati Compass, and more. And so really making sure that we're on one hand clarifying the rules of the road, right? If you're coming into our jurisdiction and conducting operations, here's how it works. Here's what we'll be doing. Here's how our tools and processes go. But then on the other hand, really putting dollars behind organizations we know are helping our vulnerable residents. And that also includes, we launched a hate and bias reporting portal online. It's got a long URL, so the fastest way to get there is Googling Cincinnati hate and bias reporting. But wanting to provide that opportunity for people anonymously or not to be able to report if there are any incidents of anti-immigrant acts of any kind or racism or anything like that, wanting to make sure that we're being responsive to the experience that our residents are having on the ground.
Those that funding that you just referenced, Councilmember Albee, I think it was close to $350,000 of funding that was spread across four different organizations. I know the city, this is a different budget, but you're looking at some tight budgeting to deal with in the next budget cycle. Do you feel good about the city's decision on spending that money in that way?
Absolutely. I think the council has been really united here, and Councilmember James led on a more recent allocation from our carryover budget to support Immigrant and Refugee Law Center. Some of the biggest needs we're seeing and hearing from our immigrant residents are around food and shelter, basic needs. This is a constant need, but also legal services, right? You can imagine living in a household where you don't know if you go to work one day, if you get to come home. And having to think proactively about if you are taken while you're at work, who's going to take care of your kids? And having to put together guardianship paperwork proactively just in case you don't come home at night, right? Those are the type of legal things that we're trying to help navigate. And Councilmember Nolan has also been really active, kind of bringing our legal community together to figure out how we can help residents navigate these legal services and needs right now in the face of a lot of uncertainty.
Councilmember James, Councilmember Albee just referenced a motion that you introduced to give, I think it was $210,000 to the Immigrant and Refugee Law Center to provide legal counseling to people facing deportation and help connect immigrant communities to social services. I wanted to ask you about that. The Inquirer reported on this and had an email response from former Department of Homeland Security Assistant Secretary Tricia McLaughlin, who called that proposal, quote, a slap in the face, end quote, of the Cincinnati children who live in poverty. What do you think about that? How do you respond to that characterization of that funding?
I think it's frankly ridiculous. I think that my background is in nonprofit and social services. I think that short time I've shared as a city council member, I've been borderline insatiable in my appetite to protect our most vulnerable. That also aligns with my experiences growing up. I know I've shared my story before, but I've experienced homelessness with my single mother in my lifetime. I think that's a ridiculous statement. This investment is protecting people in a state of crisis who are valuable residents and members of the Cincinnati community. If she forgets, but I would say that this is a priority area that I think that we need to see aligned with our efforts in providing food security, providing housing to our residents, preventing against eviction for our residents, all of the duplicitous services that the city is vital in uplifting, especially in the nonprofit ecosystem here in Cincinnati and being the backbone organization to fund a lot of these efforts. But I will say that this is a harmonious part of that ecosystem in protecting our residents. And I could talk, I know we're being brief here, but I could talk ad nauseum about how these get upstream of some of our other priorities like driving public safety and driving security in our neighborhoods. So that's work that's vital, Frank. And I think that I would call her comment a slap in the face.
Okay. Well, I have been talking with Cincinnati City Council members Ryan James and Anna Albee. Thank you both so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Up next, should the state of Ohio gather data on students' immigration status? This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. I want to give you all a heads up about a story we're working on for next week. Are you a small business owner planning to use the tariff refund portal? Tell us your experience. Call 513-419-7100. Leave your name and comment, and we might use your message on the air. We return now to our discussion about ICE enforcement. Officers from a Dayton area police department visited several Cincinnati schools earlier this month, saying they were working on behalf of ICE. Joining me now to discuss what happened and a proposed state law that would gather information about students' immigration status is Cincinnati Public Schools Board of Education President Brandon Craig. Welcome back to the program, Board President Craig.
Always happy to join.
We appreciate your being here. So tell us briefly what happened with this police chief and this officer from a Dayton area police force who visited several Cincinnati public schools.
Sure. So we had an officer from up in Preble County, one of the local communities up there, come down. What we are understanding to be in some capacity connected to ICE is what she held herself out to be. But they came to three of our schools on the west side, specifically coming in on what they described as wellness checks. Each of our schools operated exactly the way we've trained them to and exactly the way we want them to, which is that they let them know that the proper process is to contact our general counsel's office to go through the necessary steps as every other of our local police forces do and everyone else law enforcement has done historically. And our general counsel was able to speak with her directly, let her know that she needed to follow the process in the future. They never made it in past the front desk of any of our schools. And really, it's just a testament to how good of work our community in the schools did and how good our administrators at the schools did.
And it sounds like these officers, I believe it was the police chief and an officer from this department, they didn't present warrants to school staff or anything like that, it doesn't sound like.
No. My understanding is that they simply came in saying they were doing wellness checks.
And you mentioned how the school staff responded. Does that pretty much follow the guidance that CPS has provided on how schools should deal with ICE or any federal agents?
You know, it followed the guidance that we give for all law enforcement that comes to our buildings, because whether it's our Cincinnati Police Department, the Hamilton County Sheriff, or anyone that comes through, we want to make sure our students are being safe. So we want to do these things in the correct way, so they follow the appropriate steps. Most of these law enforcement agencies do it the right way and contact us in the right way and work with us as a partner.
Okay. Well, we talked with State Representative Josh Williams earlier in the program about House Bill 26, a proposal he's introduced that would withhold state funding from local municipalities that refuse to cooperate with ICE. He told us that bill does not apply to school districts. But Representative Williams talked with us about House Bill 42, which does relate to schools. Here's how he described it.
There is additional legislation out of my office. If you look at House Bill 42, that requires some type of data collection. It doesn't require schools to allow individuals in, but there is at least one other bill that I have proposed that requires some data, because we need to know how much money we are spending on individuals who are not lawfully present here in the United States.
Is that the kind of data collection you're talking about, collecting data on what's being spent on students who are not in the country legally?
Yes, I think it's important for our taxpayers to know what our money is being spent on. And if it's being spent on criminal illegal aliens who are not lawfully present here in the United States, I think our taxpayers have an absolute right to know how much money is being spent on these individuals.
Does it include data on the students themselves, or is it more focused on spending?
It's more focused on the number of students here that are not lawfully present.
I see. I also asked him about penalties for school districts under this legislation. So what do you think the consequences should be for schools or school districts who don't allow ICE officials in, or these officers, like what happened here in Cincinnati, to come in and do what they're trying to do?
Well, I don't propose any type of punishment for schools that do that, because we want to preserve the innocence of the children, and it could be an impediment to kids getting their education. I just believe that we could work on policies between law enforcement and school districts. I mean, there's nothing that's going to stop law enforcement officers from just waiting outside the building for the individual if they have probable cause to believe that they were here illegally. I just think there needs to be better cooperation between law enforcement and all of our government agencies, regardless of what particular subject matter that agency covers.
As part of this data collection, if you're getting data on citizenship of students, could that lead ICE to focus on specific schools, to, you know, go into the schools or search the schools, or, as you say, wait for students outside the schools?
Well, that data is not for ICE's use. It's generalized data for the state of Ohio's usage.
I see. Okay. So that would be the focus to figure out the financial part of the equation.
Yeah. It's just generalized data. It wouldn't particularly outline particular schools. We just want to have the understanding of how much money we're spending. So essentially, if you see a sanctuary city like Toledo, Ohio, and they all of a sudden have a surge of undocumented minors, that hit the school system, and all of a sudden there's a surge in cost to the taxpayers, I think that's something that taxpayers should be aware of.
Board President Craig, there was a lot there that we just heard about. Have you been following this legislation? What is your reaction to what this seeks to do?
So House Bill 42 is something we were aware of dating back to last year. And again, I think these are the types of bills that are meant to bog down public schools districts with more red tape and bureaucracy without actually addressing the real issue. The truth of the matter is, a student who is in our district has a right to be educated, no matter their status. And if we are not educating them, then that's our bad. That's our mistake. So that's why we've made a commitment to making sure those students show up, they get their education, they're able to live and do as they're directed to be able to do. I think the other part to this is that truly what we did see last year, and what we've seen every time they've done these major ICE efforts, is a increase in the number of students who do not show up for school. And when they don't show up, whether they are here legally or not, when they're not showing up because they're concerned about a family member or other factors, that means they're not getting educated. That means they're chronically absent. And we know chronic absenteeism leads to lower grades, lower performance, and less growth for that student. So, I mean, if the truth is that we're trying to do something that makes a difference in those students' lives, why not make sure that we're addressing the need to put more resources in the schools to address the number of folks who are here, to make sure that we're still able to educate those students so those students don't suffer while we're addressing other factors?
We got an email from Margaret that relates to the earlier part of our conversation about the police officers who visited local schools. Margaret writes, can you confirm the officers didn't have any specific names of students? It appears they just cold called on schools that have immigrant students. Do you know whether they had names that they were trying to show school staff?
Well, so we know that they came with at least a what they communicated out as a wellness check on a particular group of people. Now, we did not get that list, so we have no idea what was on their information and what information that they were willing to provide to each of the schools if we had gone through the process. But again, the thing that they brought to us was a request to do a wellness check. That's not how we do it. That's not a process we use. If they had specific concerns about a student, they could bring those concerns directly to our general counsel or through the appropriate channels. What they shared with us was just simply that they were coming in for a wellness visit with what we understood to be some students, but we never saw the list, nor did we get a copy of it.
Okay. It didn't get that far because the school staff was like, this is the process. You need to talk to somebody else. Okay. Well, getting back to this data collection, Representative Williams says this data, if this law is passed, if it's required, would be generalized for the state of Ohio's usage. It wouldn't identify specific schools. What are your thoughts about that? Do you have any concerns about how data on citizenship status could be used if school districts had to collect it and report it to the state?
So I think it's rather naive to think that information that is collected by the state would not then turn into ICE's hands. So I think that notion that it would not get passed over to an ICE enforcement process, to me, comes across as a little bit not genuine. But what is a major concern is that trying to track information on students for which we are required to educate. So the dollars spent is not something we would not do. It is something we are required to do.
And that's required by?
Required by state law.
Yep.
So the notion that we're going to track data that we're required to do anyway, as if it's different than any other student that we're required to educate, seems rather also unnecessary. But the thing that makes it most discouraging for me is that it's adding a level of bureaucracy to a process without any additional support to the districts, without any additional resources for the districts, without any notion of acknowledging that we have a problem that is more global and that is more of a bigger issue, but we're not really addressing, which is these students still need to be educated. And without putting additional resources to address that, you know, it seems looking for a solution, looking for a problem.
I want to come back to this, this police chief and this officer who visited these schools earlier this month. You mentioned that every time there's a big immigration enforcement surge, you see absenteeism, you see kids who aren't coming to school or afraid to come to school, maybe because they're worried about a family member or they're worried about themselves. What, if any, impact did you see after these visits to these three schools earlier this month?
Well, I want to say the first impact we saw was that the community rallied around the students at these schools. And community showed up at those schools to make sure that those students got home safely, that they didn't feel fear, that they didn't have any worry, that they were able to leave their school buildings in a good, safe manner. So I want to first say to the community, thank you. I think our administration and staff did such a great job that it took away some of the fears that had been seen in the past. I think what we had heard in past ICE raids across the country was this notion of they're removing the restrictions about going up to schools to seize people, the fear of waiting outside of school buildings to take parents or older siblings in front of these young children that has, you know, a demonstrably devastating effect on these kids. And so I think that was more aligned with the fear. We didn't have that situation in this particular case because the officers never made it past the front door.
Mm. We're talking about an incident earlier this month at several Cincinnati public schools, and we're talking about a proposed bill that would collect information on students' immigration status. If you've got questions or comments, call 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Now, one of the things that Representative Williams brought up when we talked to him earlier was a case that occurred near Toledo where a man enrolled in high school using a false identity. He claimed to have been a minor who came into the country on his own, an unaccompanied minor, said he was 16. It turns out the man was 24 at the time, and he was arrested last May on a variety of charges. We don't hear a lot about incidents like that, obviously, but I wonder, is this something that board members and district officials have discussed? I mean, this case in particular, or is this something you all have thought about? Like, how do you balance student safety if someone's trying to enroll fraudulently and student privacy?
Well, and so that's why we have such a strong enrollment process to verify data, verify documentation, go through those steps. And if we find someone to have violated the law, which is what that person is alleged to have done, that's a legal matter. That's a criminal matter. And it may result in them having to go to court for it. I think what we focus on is, do we have processes in place to verify information to ensure that a student should be at the district, to the student is getting picked up at the right location, dropped off at the right location, ensure that the person is the legal guardian of the student. I mean, there's a number of things that we're verifying through that enrollment process that we do such an effective job of trying to ensure that we're getting all that information. So it's not to say that I don't think that this type of incident is a bad incident. It is, and it's something that should be addressed. I just don't hear it happening very often, and for good reason, which is that there is such an extensive level of process involved in enrollment of a student.
So it's not common for a teenager just to show up at a school or a central office and say, hey, can I start going to school here? There are a lot of steps involved, it sounds like.
Absolutely, absolutely. And we have times had to expedite the process to ensure that students who, you know, again, last year we had to do it for a charter school that closed down and we enrolled those students over a weekend. We came with information for those parents to bring to us. So not every student was able to start those first few days, but there was a process first before that student ever set foot in the door of one of our buildings.
Mm. Okay. Well, we do have a caller on the line. Hi, Jane. Thanks so much for listening. What's your question or comment?
I have worked with many immigrants of all statuses, and all of them are paying a rent, or some of them actually own their home already. And just like you or I, if we were renting or paying on a mortgage, our tax bill is included, and the tax bill covers the costs of education. So I think people cannot, with reason, cannot accuse the immigrant children of taking money from the educations of U.S. citizen children. I also think it's important for all children to have a good education so that they can become good citizens. Knowing I have been to Honduras, and I know what the violence is like down there, and I have witnessed some of it myself. And so it's easier to understand if you put your feet in their shoes and go look at their countries of the immigrants, no matter where they're from, and see the dire situations from which they're trying to escape.
Thank you, Jane. Thanks very much. I appreciate that. Do you want to comment on that, Board President Craig, especially this idea of educating everyone?
Yeah, and I'll be brief with it, but I think the thing that was key in what Jane was saying there, though, is that The truth is that these students are young people who have come here, who are here with us, who their care is our important concern. And if we're really focused on really educating and making better citizens and better future leaders in our schools, then we have to treat them with the compassion and the care and concern that we should treat every student who walks through the door.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, Jane. Thanks for that call. We sure appreciate it. And thank you for listening.
We got an email from AJ, and I think this may be, I don't know if this is something you can address, but let me read what AJ has to say. Why are our state representatives working on laws that contradict a majority of the city's laws? Why are restrictions being placed on us, the people, instead of federal employees? As a veteran, we had core values to follow. Other federal agencies require values from their employees as well. So why is it that DHS is authorized to roam our streets masked, causing terror? Don't know if his email is more of a comment. I don't know if there's anything you want to respond to there.
I would just say, you know, we've worked with several of the state legislature members who have been really helpful and have looked out for the interest of the communities they represent and serve. And I would ask that, again, as we walk through all of these struggles and these different trials and tribulations, that we think about being more humane towards each other and really embracing and appreciating the values of each other as human beings first, and refrain from trying to make things into political ploys. And that's what it feels like a lot of these legislation points are. It's just political efforts to strike against a group or a community.
Yeah. I want to ask you about this, Board President Craig. We talked about this a little bit, but, you know, Cincinnati Public Schools does have several schools with large immigrant student populations. In general, what impact has the increased ICE enforcement had on those schools and their students?
So we saw last year a distinct period of time in which we saw a number of students who were not attending, you know, by choice of their parents or themselves. And so it did hurt their ability to perform academically, and it did leave some feeling, some levels of insecurity with their community. I think the thing that we have done a really good job of with our welcome centers and with our other efforts within the schools themselves and our multilingual learner partners is restoring that trust and faith that the school that they come to is a safe space for them. And that safe space allows them to learn, to grow, and to really flourish. We open our doors to everyone in our community, and we make sure when they walk in that every soul who steps foot in CPS is treated with respect. And as much as possible as we can, ensure that they have a safe space to continue their education and to become a productive member of society afterwards.
Does that have ripple effects on students who were born and raised in Cincinnati too?
Absolutely. Like when you are exposed to folks who have cultures different than yours, who have life experiences different than yours, who have vision and perspectives different than yours, it opens your minds to the possibilities. We have seen so many students go overseas and do other programs because of their exposure to the folks in their community. I hark back to my own niece who got to learn to make Spanish food as part of her class with a classmate. That's the experiences that we want students to have. We want them to know more, to learn more, and to grow more. And the best way to do that is expose them to cultures that are different from their own.
Well, I really appreciate your coming in today. I've been talking with Cincinnati Public Schools Board of Education President Brandon Craig. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Associate producer is Harper Carlton. Technical director today is the fabulous Ella Rowan. If you miss our program live, you can find Cincinnati Edition wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Lucy May. Thank you so much for listening.